Hey, Steve, thanks for being on the show.
Jay, thanks for having me. Good morning.
So you've been in business for a long time, longer than me, and I've been in business for a long time. And so that's ideal for this episode because we want to talk to people about the idea of building a business that lasts. So how long have you been in business?
Well, you got to make me think this morning. I've been doing this for, let's say, about 35 years.
Okay. Wow. So that's a long time. And so as a result, you've seen a lot of changes in the business climate, business market, the economy, the country, the world. I mean, lots of things have changed in 3 decades. So when you first starting out in business and you're starting to kind of run your own show in the early days, what were some things that you encountered that maybe surprised you that you weren't prepared for?
Well, that's interesting. It's a long time ago, so I have to think back. Look, when you start out in business, the business that I'm in, which is providing service to high net worth individuals, especially closely held business owners, you know, like every business, when you start out, you know, how do you get clients? You know, how do you get that first client and second client and third client? So in the beginning, there was a lot of soul searching as to, you know, what did I think would be the best route to meet new people? And in the beginning, I did a lot of seminars, which was a way to really differentiate myself because a lot of people don't like to speak publicly. They're uncomfortable. So, you know, if you can get up in front of an audience and have the audience interested in what you say and you keep them interested throughout the seminar, that's important. I also built relationships with a lot of the ancillary advisors that kind of work on the teams that do what I do, like CPAs, trust and estate, tax attorneys, financial advisors. So a lot of time was invested in building those relationships, which many of them still exist today, but you're always, you know, you lose some either through people getting out of business or unfortunately getting sick and dying, and you always gain new ones. So that's always an evolution.
So a couple of things that you pointed out there that I think are really good, and I use them myself. I think a lot of people struggle with what you said, which is how do I get clients at the beginning? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good you are at what you do. If you don't have anybody to do them for, then you're not really in business. And that idea of doing live events, workshops, seminars, we've not been able to do a lot of those this year, but you did those in the early days. And I do a lot of stuff like that too, where I'll speak at live events or I'll host workshops here at our office. And I mean, that can have a huge impact because I always say there's two things of value in doing things like that. One is you're helping people, hopefully, that are there, regardless of whether they buy something else from you or do something else with you or not. I always think that's good. And then the second thing is you're having an opportunity to be in front of somebody and teach them, which proves your credibility and then allows them to actually want to buy from you.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And even using podcasts as what we're doing today, I mean, podcasts, I don't think they existed when I first got into this business. So, you know, podcasts is kind of a further evolution of a similar thing where the difference is here, I don't know necessarily who's listening and who I'm teaching and helping, which obviously when you do a seminar, you do know that, but I have the ability to have many more people be educated than when I do a seminar because it's limited to the people who are attending the seminar.
Yeah, no, that's the beauty of the internet. Just is just the live reach. It's interesting. You kind of talked about that idea of kind of creating that multiplier of reach. This doesn't relate to what you do, but there's constantly new things coming out, and there's a brand new social media app out right now because we needed another one called Clubhouse that I just started kind of playing around with. And it's really interesting because basically it's an audio only app. So unlike this, where we're on video or if people are listening to the podcast, maybe it's audio, you can set up these audio rooms and you basically just set an event title and then invite people into the room and you'll have people from all over, some people that know you, some people that know the people that are in that room coming in and just having a conversation. And I mean, that ability now is so important, especially in the midst of this whole crazy pandemic that we're going through. But even in the future, you know, there's only so many people that can come here to St. Augustine and be at a workshop in my office which is great because then they get to be in St. Augustine, which is a beautiful place. But the reach that the internet gives us is pretty powerful. So thinking about that, that's actually a good segue. So in those early years, you did workshops, you did seminars, and obviously a lot has changed over time in business. And you obviously become very experienced in the process. So what are some things that have changed, maybe with technology or the economy or something else, that has made business better for you or even made it a challenge?
Well, look, I don't think anything has changed more than since the middle of March of this year. You know, I don't care what business you're in. There's almost nobody whose business is the same today that it was 9 or 10 months ago. Some for the better, some for the worse. Even people who's financially are in the same place, they've had to modify how they do things. That's part of why I'm doing podcasting, because my business primarily is a face-to-face, meet with people one-on-one kind of business. And I'm out networking with accountants and attorneys and financial advisors. And that's how I get introductions into affluent individuals who need my service. And certainly that's been limited significantly, because regardless of whether or not you want to go out and do those meetings, you need somebody on the other side that's willing to have the meetings. And obviously everybody has a different feeling about this COVID environment, but everybody's more cautious. So podcast, I thought about it. I said, wow, I've always heard about podcasting. It's a great time to do it because most people are kind of stuck at home. And here's a way for me to meet people like yourself and to have your audience learn about me and my expertise that would never know I exist prior to doing this. So it's, and then, you know, once you do a podcast, you have something permanent. It could be on LinkedIn, it could be on Facebook, it could be on YouTube. So people, you know, Google something and they say, I want to learn about succession planning. And there's this permanent thing out there that they could listen to you at any time. They didn't have to come to your seminar, which when you think about it, it makes so much sense. But yet alone, people didn't utilize things like this until recently.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I want people to think about this that are watching or listening, what you just talked about how to leverage podcasts, because you basically just gave like a podcast marketing lesson to people, even though you're not a marketing guy, I am. But that's the beauty of it is so multi-layered, right? So if you're listening, think about how this works and could work for your business, because I think Steve just gave you a lot of really valuable nuggets. Here's the example. Steve is looking for, you know, high net worth individuals. And in many cases, business owners fall into that category. And so as a result, he's doing two things. One, he's on a show with me. I'm not sure I qualify yet as a high net worth individual, but you know, I'm moving towards that area. I'm going to keep working on it. But people that listen to the show, certainly there's people that listen to the show. Some of you out there that are high net worth individuals. So he's able to have an audience in front of you. And on the flip side, what happens for me is I interview people on this show who have been in business for 10 years or more. And I also help people with all kinds of marketing strategy and growth and get things off of their plate. And so while I could potentially be a prospect for Steve, or those of you that are listening could potentially be a prospect for Steve, Steve could be a prospect for me, and or somebody that he knows could be a prospect for me. And at the same time, we're having a great conversation that adds value and is going to hopefully help people that are listening. So that's what I love about this medium of podcasting, is that there's so much value across all these different layers. And it can help you grow your business. So if you're out there listening, just rewind, listen to how Steve was talking about that and how he's thinking about using it for his business. And this is somebody who's been in business now for 3 decades plus, and is constantly going, you know what? All right, how am I gonna solve this? And at the end of the day, that's how businesses survive, is they are problem solvers.
For sure.
So Steve, what other, you know, let's talk specifically about what you do. So, you know, succession planning, legacy building, what happens when a business owner is gone, either by their own choice or by, you know, God's choice, I suppose. So is that kind of the focus of what you do? You help people plan for kind of either the unseen or, I mean, the seen. At some point, we all know that we're not going to live forever. or we're not going to be in the same business forever. So what are we going to do when we leave? Is that kind of the focus of where you're at?
Yeah. I mean, my business touches upon a lot of areas. So in one way that I would describe it is, if you took a lot of things that somebody's CPA does, a lot of things that their trust and estate and tax lawyers do and corporate lawyers, what their people who manage their money do, people who maybe provide insurance and benefit services to a client. If you kind of take what all of those advisors do and kind of like shake it up and put it into like a smoothie, you know, that's kind of me. Like I know almost everything that an accountant's going over with their business owner clients, what the trust and estate tax lawyers are going over with them. It's a multitude of areas. The area that is usually a key component of it is succession planning. So what does succession planning mean? You kind of hit upon it. There's always a succession to a business because either your business isn't going to go on forever or you're not going to go on forever.
You know, right. Like
one of those things is going to happen at some point in time. So succession means you and the business don't continue. So either the business doesn't continue or you don't continue. So that usually encompasses, you know, who's next in line? Do you have kids in the business? Do you have other partners? Do you have other family members? Do you have key employees? You know, you always need to have a plan because not having a plan is a plan. Like which a lot of people don't have a plan. And I say, well, you still have a plan.
Yeah.
You have a will. Yes or no, based on whether you have a will or not, even there you have a plan. So it's kind of like, when you're younger, somebody like yourself, it's hard, like, well, what's my succession? You know, I'm a young guy. I may be married. I may not be married. If I have kids, they're young. They're not taking over my business. If I don't have a partner. So for you, it's really, okay, what happens if something happens to you?
Right.
You know, is your business going to continue? Probably not. You know, if you have people relying upon your income from your business, well, what happens to them if the business goes away and the business can't be sold? There isn't a lot of value there to bring into your family. How's your family going to live? You know, so you get into things like life insurance and disability and how I protect my family. As you get older and your family is older and your assets grow, you know, it gets more complicated. You know, do I want to pass this to my kids? Do they want to come in? You know, a lot of times the mistakes that are made is sometimes a kid will come into a business, not because they really want to be in the business, because they either feel obligated or they sit there and they go, if I work in my parents' business, they'll pay me $250,000 a year. If I go out and try to get something on my own, I'm not going to make that kind of money. So even though I don't really want to be there, I'll work there. And the parent then thinks, oh, well, they want to be in the business. Well, maybe they don't really want to be in the business. And then sometimes the parent's like, my kid's in the business, but like, they're not really equipped to run this business. So like the kid's investing time in the business and the parent's thinking like, I'm going to have to find an outside buyer because if I leave this to my son or daughter, this business is never going to succeed. So a lot of times, not everybody is totally honest with one another. That's part of what I try to do is to get all of the stuff out on the table and to really understand what's everybody's goals. Or look at it this way, Jay, I got a son and daughter in the business. I don't know. I have two kids. They're not exactly equal. They're not equally smart. They're not equally hardworking and driven or willing to take risks. So like if I have two kids in the business, am I giving it to both of them? Am I giving it equally to both of them? Well, then if I leave it equally, nothing gets done because then every decision requires the two of them agreeing. And they've been my kids all along and they don't agree on anything. So it's going to change when they have a business that all of a sudden they're going to agree on everything about running a business. So I'm kind of hitting a little bit all over so people could relate to it. But I get involved in a lot of that, but much more detailed and much more involved in a lot of the tax and legal issues.
Yeah, it's interesting. Number one, if any of my kids are listening to this, I'm not going to pay you $250,000. So forget about that. And when I wrote my books, I wrote a book by the same title of this podcast, Building a Business That Lasts. And I wrote it right around our 20th company anniversary. And in the beginning, I prefaced it to the kids and I said, remember to always follow your dreams and know that your dreams don't have to be my dreams. And I think that that's a, you know, none of my kids, I mean, they're all pretty young. My youngest is 8, my oldest is 16, but none of them really have any real interest in working with me or for me at all. So I don't know what that says, but they just want to follow their own path. And that's what I would want to do too. So maybe they got a little bit of me in them. But we've been talking about this internally. As a matter of fact, this is one of the things that I'm kind of tasked with working on right now, because it's not an easy thing to sort out all the details, is, you know, what happens if I walk out in the street, get hit by a bus? What happens if I'm like one of the rare, you know, 30 somethings that gets COVID and dies? It's possible. Like, what happens if I get some other thing, random, weird thing? My brother had brain cancer at 33. I mean, he survived, thank God. But like, we don't know, you know. And I was at an event one time, and I got to ask Simon Sinek a question. Great guy. And he said, he asked me that question, asked me about business growth in the future. And he said, well, it sounds like what you need to be worried about is what happens when you walk out in the street and get hit by a bus. What happens to the business? Does it last 2 weeks or 2 years, you know, or does it just keep going indefinitely? And ultimately, that's the sign of the business strength. But here's what's interesting in this scenario to me. What I had been thinking about all along, which is a big piece of this, is how operationally does the business function without me? And we've gotten really far down that path. This summer, I took a 30-day vacation with our family, didn't touch the business at all, and it thrived perfectly fine without me. So the operations side works really well at this point. But now there's a whole legal side and all the details around what would actually happen, you know? And then what would happen? Like, well, my wife would own the business, but she doesn't know how to run a business, not her thing. So then, like, then what happens and who gets paid and how's that going to work? And what if my wife and I both died together? So those are the things I'm working on right now from a legal perspective. And I think it's easy, especially when you are younger, because I started really young and I'm still relatively young. It's easy to not worry about those things. But we've all known enough people that have had, you know, tragic endings. And I think if 2020 is a gauge of anything, we know that we don't know what to expect. And preparing for these things are really important. So just real tactical, if you're talking to another business owner, leader, entrepreneur, obviously there's people listening to this at very different levels, right? Some people are just thinking about starting a business. Some people have been in business for a few years, but they've not built anything, you know, super substantial yet. They're still trying to figure out how to make the wheels turn. And then some people are really established and they're just listening for other insights because they're constant learners, like you and I are. So at each of those stages, what are some practical things people could start doing, or what do they need to think about right now in order to kind of set their path towards where they need to go, to know that they do have an actual plan versus a bad plan, which is no plan?
Well, I would say to you that, let me tell you some of what I find are the reasons people don't plan. I would say to you, there's probably the two most common that I find. Number one is, and you kind of hit upon this a little bit, when you own a business, you're an entrepreneur, you're a risk taker. And most people who own a business, the business consumes a lot of their thinking in their life. So in order to plan, you have to stop doing something or allocate a certain amount of hours from something that you know is important to take care of today, to allocate those hours to something that may be important in the future. And that's not how people tick, especially that's not how entrepreneurs tick. So maybe something like you having a brother at a young age have, you know, something so serious as brain cancer or COVID, you know, some events sometimes take place that sometimes get people to like say, time out. You know, I know this probably isn't going to happen to me, but it could. And I got to like plan my future a little bit here. But generally, very, very, very difficult to get entrepreneurs to stop doing what they need to do today to do it tomorrow. And one of the reasons why, like a lot of times, let's use your CPA. Everybody has an accountant. CPA generally is the advisor who has the closest relationship with the client. They see him the most often. They talk to him, probably the most trusted advisor. But CPAs many times are not very good at getting these things done because they, when they meet with the client or talk to the client, there's always some emergency. You know, there's always some fire that needs to get put out. And, you know, and the CPA is going with, you know, is it October 15th? Is it September 15th? Is it April 15th? You know, is it July 15th? Is it year-end planning? So it sometimes you need an advisor on the team whose only job is to help you plan, you know, because that's all they're doing for you rather than the, because the CPA, you could always say, look, I don't want to deal with it right now. And the CPA is like, well, I'm getting paid, you know, $25,000 a year from this client. I'm not going to upset the apple cart. If he doesn't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. Well, somebody like me, I don't serve any other purpose. So if I don't help you plan, there's really no need for you to have me as part of your team. So sometimes having that outside person pushes you. So one reason people don't plan is what I just said. They just can't focus. The second time planning becomes difficult, especially in a family business, is when, let's say I got three kids and one of them's in the business and two of them are not in the business. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, all for the last 30-ish years, my kids have played me against one another. Like, you know, Jay got a new phone. So Billy wants a phone and Sally wants a phone. And then Jay gets a TV in his room and so does Billy and Sally. And then Jay gets a car. And then when Billy gets a certain age, he wants a car. Why did Billy get this car? And I got that car. And, you know, they're always playing you. They're good at that. They're good salesmen kids. So then all of a sudden you've told them all through your life, I love you the same. You're all my kids. I'm always going to love you and give you the same that I give to your brother or sister. And then one day you wake up and you say, holy smokes, I built this big business. I got one of my kids in the business. I got two not in the business. My main asset is my business. Am I going to leave this business to all three of my kids when only one's in the business? When am I going to make that kid a minority shareholder to two kids that don't know anything about the business? Or maybe I give it equally to all three, but I give the voting rights to my kid in the business. But then with all due respect, he could totally screw my other kids because he could just sell the business and make some deal. When he sells the business, he could take a salary and not pay anything to his brothers and sisters. So, or do I leave it just to my kid in the business? And then what am I going to give to my other kids since most of my assets are in the business? And that doesn't even take into account estate taxes and income tax issues, depending how big the business is and how substantial the wealth is of the family. So a lot of times dad who, let's say in the 60, 70, 80 year old range today, most businesses are still run by men. That's certainly going to change as time goes on. So generally it's dad. He's sitting there going, well, wait a minute. If I tell my three kids what my plan is, no matter what it is, somebody's not going to like it. And then what's going to happen is, let's say my son, who's married to my daughter-in-law, who I don't really get along with that well. I'm just making this up for conversation. I love my daughter-in-law.
Just for the record.
But let's say I don't really get along that well with my daughter-in-law. When she finds out that her husband, my son, may not get any of the business and he may not make the kind of money my other son is making, well, all of a sudden she could say, well, you know what? Your dad's not seeing his grandkids anymore. Like I'm holding his grandkids hostage because I never loved your dad to begin with. And now I really don't like him based on what his plan is. So a lot of times dad sits back and says, I'm not doing that. Let them find out when I'm dead. You know, like I love my grandkids and I want to see all my children and grandchildren. So I don't want to upset the apple cart. I'm not going to tell anybody anything. And when I'm dead, then they'll be pissed off, but I'm dead. So I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Now, I know that sounds terrible, but I think you could sit back, Jay, and say, I could see how somebody would think that way. Like I could see how they don't want to upset the apple cart. So it's the combination of not wanting to upset the apple cart and stopping emergencies that I need to deal with today to take time to plan for the future. Those are two of the main reasons it's tough to get people do it, because people are like, I'm young. You're a young guy. What do you have to worry about? You're not going to die tomorrow. You're not going to get sick. I'll deal with it later. But you're right. COVID, you could be that unlucky 30 or 40 year old who gets sick and now your wife can't run the business and like your business doesn't really, it's not that saleable. And now how's your wife going to put food on the table and take care of your kids if you didn't think about this at all? So that's like a long answer to your short question.
No, that's good. As you were telling those stories, I was thinking the sad part about this is, based on how long you've been in business, my guess is those aren't just random stories, but you've probably actually seen a lot of that unfold. And that is, you know, just thinking about all that, I thought, man, that is a stressful situation for everybody involved. But I think especially if you're the one who owns the business, and especially if you're a dad, like you're thinking, like, I think both if you're a dad and if you have a team that you care about at the company, you're like, I'm just trying to help everybody here. And yet you're going to be the one that's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place if you, you know, don't have a good plan in place. So that's a big deal.
Let me give you one example, Jay. I think you'll appreciate this. This has really happened, but it shows you what could happen. So I go in and I have a meeting, this nice big building, really nice sized company, obviously successful family. And I meet with a guy who's probably, you know, I would say age-wise, like late 50s-ish, early 60s, sitting behind this big desk. And, you know, after, you know, some of the soft talk and small conversation, I get into like trying to get some information. So let's say you're the guy and I go like, okay, Jay, you know, what percentage of the business do you own? And you go, zero. So I'm already like, I kind of have an idea of what may have happened here, but I keep going. I go, so Jay, you don't own, is this your family's business? Yes. So who owns the business? And you go, my mother. So now I know what happened, but I keep playing along this. So I go, so Jay, tell me what happened. So he goes, well, here's what happened, Steve. I came into this business. I was in my 30s. My dad was in his 60s. Mom had nothing to do with the business. My dad didn't really do any planning. And he suddenly died of a heart attack at like 61 years old. And his will said that he leaves everything to mom. You know, it's common, you know, dad dies, leaves it to mom dies, leaves it to dad. So mom inherited the business. So I go, so let me ask you a couple of questions, Jay. When dad died, how big of a business was it? Oh, we were doing about 5 million of revenue. How big is it now? Oh, we do 50 million of revenue. I go, is your mom involved at all in the business? No. Are your siblings involved at all? No. So I guess to pat you on the back, I guess, Jay, you built this from a $5 to $50 million business. I mean, you had a head start. Obviously, dad gave you something to start with, but $5 million to $50 million is a big difference. Okay. Yeah. So I go, you did that. I go, what's your relationship like with mom? Well, to be honest, not great. Well, why is that? Well, because we fight over things relating to the business. I want to invest money and grow the business. She is afraid. She doesn't want to do that. You know, I want to get compensated more. She controls my salary, even though I built this business. Hmm. And I said, you know, you understand what you're dealing with, Jay, is you see, your mom is not your mom anymore. Your mom was your mom till the day your dad died. After the day your dad died, your mom became a widow. And when a mom becomes a widow, especially if dad kind of handled all the financial things and took care of everybody, mom gets nervous because she's always relied on dad. He's not there anymore and thus becomes much more cautious with things. That's part of what you're dealing with. So just out of curiosity, Jay, you have two siblings, right? You said a brother and a sister. Who does mom get along best with? Oh, far and away, my sister. Why is that? Well, my sister takes care of my mother. She sees her the most. She sees those grandkids the most. So, Jay, do you have any idea what plan mom has with the business? No, she won't talk to me about it. As a matter of fact, I don't even use the same lawyer that my mom uses because it's almost like a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. So I go, you do realize that one of a couple of things could happen. Mom could die and leave you the business. You, but now you're going to pay estate taxes on a $50 million business that you grew, but you still got to pay the taxes because she owns the business. Or mom could leave the business to all three of you and you're a minority owner in a business that you built. Well, mom could say, I don't like my son and I'm leaving it to my other kids. And you could end up giving all your best years of your life working in this business and inherit nothing. So I really gave the guy indigestion because he kind of knew a little bit about these issues, but I kind of like hit him over the head a little bit. And that's an example where dad didn't do planning and nobody really thought out. Nobody really thought out what could end up happening in the future. And that's really sad. And basically that is really a good example of what could happen.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I think that what the other thing that's happening here that's valuable for people to think about that are listening is one of the things that I always say when it comes to marketing a service, and I don't think you're trying to market or sell to anybody. You're just telling stories because that's what you've been good at. But what you're doing as well is you're agitating a problem. And so people are listening, not to turn this into a marketing seminar, but people buy things because they know that there's a problem. And I always say there's three different types of prospects. There's somebody who doesn't know that there's a problem. That's a lot of people. There's somebody who knows there's a problem, but they're not sufficiently disturbed yet to take action. That might be the guy sitting at my desk. He's not done much. He's, you know, maybe he's meeting with you, but that's about the extent of it. And he's only doing that because he got forced into it by somebody else. And then there's somebody who knows there's a problem and they're sufficiently disturbed about it to take action. And the example that I always give of this is like, you know, you've got a cavity, but you don't know about it. And then your tooth's kind of aching, but it's not really that bad. You take an ibuprofen and it's fine. And then now it's hurting so bad, you can't even think straight. You got a pounding headache. You got to go to the dentist right now. There's a serious problem. And so as you tell those stories, what happens for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people who are listening, it agitates that problem. You start to kind of go, well, shoot, gosh, I never thought about it that way. Because I think a lot of entrepreneurs in general are glass half full kind of people. I think a lot of entrepreneurs are the kind of people that go, you know what? I got a big, bright future ahead and I'm going to build amazing things and it's going to go exceptionally well. And we know along the way, there's going to be, you know, some debris that we have to deal with and some problems on the road, but we have a vision for a bright future. And I think the question we need to ask sometimes is, yes, but what if this happens? Like, how are we prepared for that? Or are we prepared for that? And in many cases, I think we're not. We just did an exercise with our team recently that was really powerful. I'm teaching a new life plan course. It's kind of a new side of the business for coaching that I'm really excited about, called Hero on a Mission. And one of the first exercises we do, this is pretty common, Stephen Covey did this ages ago, is we get people to write their obituary. And when you have people sit down and write their obituary out with a future vision of what they want things to look like when they're dead, and then they realize the chasm between where they are as a person or where they are in life and where they want to be when somebody's actually reading their obituary or reading their eulogy and they don't have any control over it, most people cry during that exercise. I mean, like grown men like are like sitting there just, you know, oh, a little dusty in here, you know, because we've not thought about these things. We've not thought about the reality of what happens. And I think the scariest thing in some of those situations is you could be kind of callous on one side and be like, well, I'm going to be dead, so I don't really care what happens. But I don't think most people are like that. Most people care about their families. They care about their children. They care about the teams that work with them now. And they want to do the right thing. And then what the last thing any of us, last thing I would want, or I think any other business leader would want is to know after they're dead that their family and their team is sitting around going, man, why did he not prepare for this? Why did he not plan? This is his job. And I think as a leader, our job is to see the future a little bit. It's to see the unknowns and hopefully prepare for those things. I always say my primary responsibility is to create an environment where people have the opportunity to fail, just not fail catastrophically. And to me, if a business completely collapsed, that is a catastrophic failure. And even worse, it's one that most people on the team, probably all of them, and even my family would have very little control over how that happened if I didn't plan appropriately as the leader. So it's a great lesson what you're doing in telling stories and also relating them, like to me personally, using my name in the story. For everybody that's listening, that's I don't think that Steve's trying to sell me by any means. He's just telling stories. But naturally, the telling of those stories becomes an incredible sales exercise. And it comes from a place, I believe, of you going, I've seen these things happen and I don't want these things to happen. And I want to be, and I know I can help that prevent a lot of that pain. So let me go fix that. Is that kind of the thought process?
Yeah, no, I think it's very well put, you know, what you just said. And you know, it's amazing. Like I tell people, I mean, obviously I never use anybody's real names, but I, you know, I try to tell people, friends, you know, like what I deal with some people to get things done, you know, literally having to ride to their house, go into their basement with them, go into their, like, you know, file cabinets, pull out stuff, sit with them to find it, make copies of the stuff, like to get the process started. Like it's sometimes pulling teeth. It's like asking people to go to the dentist. You know, it's like, it's so, so difficult because it's stuff people just do not want to deal with. And it's sad because, you know, so many times I'll be told by people, oh, Stephen, I would like to introduce you to my friend, but you know, he's a really successful guy. Like, I'm sure he's done all of this. And I'm like, look, maybe he's done it, but probably not. And probably even if he's done it, he may not have done it to the best of his ability. And what I try to educate people on is, it's almost like the analogy I give is, you know, if somebody, you know, said to me, my lighting isn't set up the best way in my house, what would I know about it? Like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you want to trust somebody, but I don't know if it's set up right. The problem is when it comes into this kind of planning, the end user, the client, trusts people around them, which he should. There's no reason why, unless somebody's proven not to be trustworthy, that you shouldn't trust your CPA and your attorney and all the people on your team. But you, the only thing you know is that the people around you have given you a plan and you trust them. You don't know whether that's the best plan. How would you? That's not your area of expertise. So what I always try to tell people is always have an open mind, like always be at least open. Doesn't mean you have to get rid of everybody you deal with, but at least be open to listen to people, because maybe there's something that's thrown at you to say, wow, nobody really mentioned that to me. And then you could always bring your other advisors together and say, okay, guys, here's another thing that's been brought to my attention. What do you guys think about it? But, you know, it's sometimes you can't get to the client because they're shielded by their team and they don't know what they don't know, the client. And sometimes just being open to things could be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those, you've given us a lot of good things to think about. My guess is a lot of people listening to this are going, oh gosh, I've not really thought about that stuff at all. And it's not necessarily the most fun thing to think about, but you got to do it. You got to take care of your family, and you got to take care of your business and the people that work with the business. I like to transition a little bit. There's kind of, as we start to kind of wrap up the show a little bit, there's three questions I always like to ask. The first one is around the subject of work-life balance. I simply ask, what does that even mean to you? It means something different to everybody. And how has that changed through different seasons of your life? The second is where people can find you online if they want to learn more about you and what you do. And then the last one is any parting advice for people who want to build a business that lasts. So first question, work-life balance. What does that even mean to you, and how has that changed through different seasons of life?
Well, it's unbelievably important to me. I've been married to the same woman for over 40 years.
Congratulations.
My family, my children, my grandchildren are unbelievably important to me. You know, one of the biggest advantages of being an entrepreneur is that I have been able for all these years to make my own schedule and prioritize. My son was a big time ice hockey player, and I went to probably 1,000 hockey games he was in over the years. I could have never done that if I was an employee. So, you know, having that ability, and I think with COVID even more so, because I think probably if there's any one positive that's come out of COVID is how many families have spent, like I've had my daughter and my son-in-law living with me. I'm now down in Florida, you know, where my son, daughter-in-law, my grandkids are, and my son-in-law and daughter are living with me here. I mean, I don't know how happy they are to be living with me all this time, but obviously as a parent, to be able to be with your children, that's been one saving grace of COVID, is there's been a lot more family time together. So family, work-life balance to me is so important. In terms of reaching me, one place you could reach me is stephengoodman.biz, where I offer a free copy of a book I've written on business succession planning. So anybody who has a business, a family business, a business with partners or key employees, I think they would find the book very useful. There's no charge to it. You can come there. You could also come to my other site, which is shgplanning.com, where I have about 70 articles there that I've written on subjects from succession planning to estate planning to insurance to investments to annuities. It's pretty, you know, pretty broad area.
Awesome. So that's really valuable. I put the link to that on the Facebook in the comments for people that are watching on Facebook. People on the podcast, I'll put a link to that, but it's pretty easy to remember anyway, stephengoodman.biz. So parting thoughts. So when you think about talking to another business owner about the idea of building a business that lasts, which you have done, what kind of advice would you leave them with today?
I think you should always be learning. Like, I'm an avid learner. Like, every day I want to know I learned something that I didn't know the day before. Now, as you get older, you hope some stuff doesn't leave you as you add new stuff in. But I'm always looking to learn and educate myself, not only for my business, but just in life. I think finding both friends and other business people that you trust, that you could ask questions to, whether it's informally or whether it's being part of like study groups or, you know, the YPOs of the world and Vistages and those kind of organizations. I think it's important to surround yourself with people, because nobody knows everything. And you always want to, like, sometimes I can't ask something to my wife. She hasn't had to experience what I've had, but I could maybe ask you, Jay, like, how did you deal with that? Like, you know, you've had to deal with some of the things I've dealt with, even though it may be a different business. So sometimes you need to be around people who you can ask the kind of questions to that have experienced some things that you have. So I think that's probably two of the most important things: learning, always learning, and having people around you that you could bounce things off of.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I found that to be true as well. I mean, being in communities of other business leaders, owners, and entrepreneurs has been a huge godsend to me over the years. It's what's accelerated my growth. I think a lot of people over time are so worried about their competition, and they should be more worried about collaboration, or more interested in, I should say, collaboration. Because some of the best growth opportunities I've had have been being in circles of other business leaders who do the same thing I do. And we're just bouncing ideas across because we understand each other. We know what it's like to try and build a team. We know what it's like to deal with all the things that come along with trying to grow a business. And it's not even just in the same industry, but even in varied industry. I just actually joined a new organization called C12, which is like a council of Christian CEOs. You meet in a group of 12 every month and have a great conversation for a full day. It's a big commitment. One day per month is a lot. Sure. But It's so impactful because it helps me refocus on what I need to focus on, and it holds me accountable. Because it's kind of like what you were saying earlier about if you're just dealing with the same team members, even like an accountant, like you said, it's almost like an internal team member, even if they're not. To having somebody from the outside look in and go, oh, hold on, but who has access to things that maybe other people wouldn't have access to? And goes, hold on, what about that? What's going on there? And you have to respond to that. And sometimes the answer is, I don't know. I've not really thought about that. And man, that's just so valuable.
You just to close on one thing and using the term about holding people accountable, that's the exact words I was going to use. And that a lot of people don't want to be held accountable, mm-hmm. You know, and I think that being willing to be held accountable is such a way to grow as a person and as a business person, because there's people on you and you know, you're going to meet with these group of 12 guys and gals every month. And you know that they're going to ask you, you know, what did you do? How did you handle this thing, Jay, in this past month? And you know, you can't go there and say, if it's that last day, it could be that 29th day, you're taking care of that thing because you're not going in front of those 12 people and saying, I didn't do anything. You know,
that's
you don't
right.
have those people, you're just not going to do it. Another month will go by. So yeah, I think it's great.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for being on the show today. I know you made me think about a lot of things that have been valuable and will have impact on my business and my future. And I think that's probably true for a lot of other people. So I appreciate your time.
Yes, it's been great, Jay. Thank you and good luck with your family.
Hey, I hope this video has helped you with some tips and ideas to build a business that lasts. Make sure you subscribe to our channel so that you don't miss out on the next videos that we roll out. And more importantly, for some awesome free resources, head over to our website at buildingabusinessthatlasts.com. You can get a free copy of my book there where I tell you how I have built an agency that's grown year over year for the last 20 years in a row. So go grab that, buildingabusinessthatlasts.com, and make sure to subscribe to our channel. Thanks. We'll see you soon.